Welcome to the Advance Your Art podcast, where we talk about the journey from artist to entrepreneur and everything in between. You've worked hard to hone your craft. Now take it to the next level with tips, techniques, strategies, and routines used by successful artists to grow their businesses and careers. Now, let's get started and have some fun with your host, Yuri Cataldo.
Hello, Kim. Welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking your time to chat with me today. I really appreciate it. I'd like to start off by asking how you describe yourself and what it is that you do.
There's a lot of breadth in that. I'm an author. But I'm also a mentor, a writing and publishing coach, a photographer, a travel writer, and a few other things on the side. Mm-hmm. My major focus in recent years is split between my own writing and helping other people get their ideas and their writing out to the world as books.
Okay. Wow, you must be an incredibly busy person. How do you manage your schedule to get all that done?
It's a bit chaotic at times.
Sure. I bet.
I tend to live by having an electronic diary, but that's more so that I don't miss any important appointments, you know, things that have a locked time. Mm-hmm. As far as getting other things done, I'm not a morning person. You know, I do not do mornings well.
Okay.
So the joy of working for myself, running my own business, is that I can do things at whatever time of day works for me. Mm-hmm. And what I do on any one day tends to be driven by the schedule on all sorts of things, because when working with books, there's always, from the moment that something is completed and heading towards publishing and launch, mm-hmm. there's kind of a schedule of times that you need to do things so that it gets the best launch possible. Promotions happen, things stay visible to people. Mm-hmm. In the process of getting to there, particularly if I'm working with an author and helping them get their book done, there's a whole series of processes where we go backwards and forwards between us. So I can't go, this week I'm working on this book, because what I'm going to need to do on that book may take a few hours or a few days. And then I send the latest version of the proof or a series of questions or something to the author, and I have to wait for them to respond, send me back other images, send me back more info, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I always have a stack of things that are kind of interleaved that I'm doing depending on where each of them is up to.
Okay.
Which, well, sometimes is a bit frustrating. Other times is really good, because there are times when that makes it easier to slot in time to write my own books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet. You didn't go to school for writing. Were there early experiences in your life that then planted a seed for your later writing career?
I used to write, like, as a child, I would write things, just random ideas would come and I would write short stories and stuff. Mm-hmm. And my writing for things you have to write at school was reasonable. I read a lot. I always read from when I was tiny. I could read before I ever went to school. My parents taught me at home, and I just absorbed books. You know, I was in out of the kids section of the local library and into the adult section at the age of 8, because I was in the kids. I'd read all the stuff I wanted to read there.
Oh, sure.
So it was just seemed sensible that I wrote things. When I was 15, I had my first piece of stuff published, which was an article about a horse event in a national magazine. But then somewhere in that 15 to 20 kind of age group, mm-hmm. going through the whole late teenage angst and all sorts of crises, like I think we all do at some level, and doing a year of uni and deciding I didn't want to do that anymore. And somewhere in that, I kind of got convinced that I couldn't write, that I really didn't do it particularly well. So I would still randomly write poetry, but I stopped doing much else. Mm-hmm. And so I worked in a whole range of different jobs for many years. And it slowly dawned on me while I was doing this that I was, in fact, writing all the time. Writing the kind of stuff that you do in jobs like project reports and emails explaining things and documents about stuff and FAQs and the list goes on. Mm-hmm. The kind of thing that these days I describe as bureaucratic fiction, which requires as much creative mind effort as writing actual fiction. Mm-hmm. And it sort of sunk in on me that, hey, if I can write this stuff, mm-hmm. and I was perpetually teaching the guys who work for me or people who work with me how to write things better for the stuff they were doing, in some cases teaching suppliers how to write their proposals so that the people we had to get to sign off on them in the organisation would sign off on them. And I went, maybe I should go back to actually writing stuff of my own. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we've always had a small business on the side, even while doing corporate jobs and things with friends. And one of the things we'd done in that way back in 1990 was publish a hardcover book, okay. not our own content, but previously unreleased content for a reasonably well-known author. Mm-hmm. And it was a great learning experience, but it was also torture because in the pre-digital publishing era, publishing something was a very big undertaking. Mm-hmm. And we kind of put that aside after that, and we published art prints for quite some years. And then around 2000, the whole China cheap prints availability of the world kind of exploded and it became non-viable. And I just parked everything, both my own writing and what we were doing in business. And then about 10 years ago, the whole digital publishing thing started to really surface. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it and went, that would make it easier. Maybe I should go back to writing. And so I started writing and just pushed out some things of my own. At that stage, primarily nonfiction sort of things. Mm-hmm. And I started engaging with a lot of other people in the publishing community. So I thought that people would be wanting to know how to actually publish their book. But the questions I kept getting was, how do I get it written? How do I get from this idea in my head to something that can be published? Mm-hmm. And I started working with people on that, on how to write, because all that stuff I'd done in corporate around teaching people how to write reports and proposals and the rest of it, the tools and the techniques you use to work out how to write things are very similar across a multitude of areas. So I started applying all of that to helping people and then writing books about how to write. And mm-hmm. and it kind of went from there. And at the same time, I've also been writing fiction and things under pen names and doing more there. And it just kind of exploded. And I intentionally planned things to the point where 3 years ago now I got to walk out of doing corporate jobs at all and just do books and things as a business, which is much more fun and much better for my health.
Oh, yeah, I bet. But so I'm curious on your corporate jobs, because your corporate job was working for the Department of Defense, which...
Well, it was one of them, one amongst many.
right, which it's it sounds absolutely amazing. So before you got into writing in that, like, what did you go to school for, why did you end up working for the Department of Defense?
So my very first bits of education were more focused around agriculture.
Okay.
And then when I gave up on uni the first time around because I just didn't like the whole thing and started working, I worked in all sorts of jobs. In clerical, in sales, I ran a photographic shop, I did all sorts of stuff. I worked as a professional photographer.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and did some uni stuff by correspondence. And the first thing I did is I have a diploma in applied science in horse husbandry. It's like something like but then I went back and I have a graduate diploma in applied science in computing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because all the people around me were into tech and doing things. And that was in like the late 80s, so late 80s, early 90s. So computers were still an interesting exercise. And oddly enough, I had friends who were into programming in the early 80s, in the very early days of it, and I just looked at it and went, you're all mad. But the further we went, the more interested I got in what people were doing with things and how computers were coming into the workplace. So I ended up actually doing a degree in it. And even though programming used to make no sense to me, I learned enough of it to decide I didn't want to be doing that. But I ended up doing a lot of infrastructure things. So I spent, in the end, I spent sort of 25, 30 years working in IT.
Okay.
And I did everything from hands-on technical to project management and managing technical teams and coordinating national teams. And again, people go, computers, it's all that analytical numbersy stuff, you know, how can you be creative and do that? And
mm-hmm.
Well, I don't actually see a boundary. People are very keen to make boundaries between mm-hmm. what's creative and what's not. But work with a few people who are really good at coding
mm-hmm.
is the most creative thing in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Because they can visualize something that will happen on a screen pictorially. They can visualize the layer behind it about the connections between all those things that someone interacts with.
Mm-hmm.
And they can visualize the layer behind that, which is millions of lines of semi-gibberish that makes it happen.
Right.
It's the most creative piece of thinking. And look at the apps and things that get developed. You know, where do those ideas come from? Mm-hmm. So there's not really a boundary. It's just another piece of expression.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that the worst thing about working in corporate sort of jobs, and, okay, I worked in government, in defence, in always a civvy, never in uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And for big companies that were outsourcing companies for government. And the thing that was there, the thing that drove me crazy and drives a lot of other people crazy is that progress in those environments is so slow. There used to be a kind of saying that if you want things to change, wait for someone in a higher level job to die. Because the culture is so embedded. So because change is difficult, you can have a great idea and people can say it's a great idea, but unless you can really get it into the head of one of the traditional people in a higher position, because normally people in higher positions are older, they've been there, they've worked their way up, so their thinking is a few generations behind often.
Right.
Unless you can get them on board, it never happens. So you see these cycles go round where every 5 years or so, the same brilliant idea will surface, and it'll be a new brilliant idea. And you kind of go, hang on a second, pull out the document from the bottom drawer, change a few names, here's one I prepared earlier. And after about the fourth iteration of this kind of thing, you go, I'm trapped in a Groundhog Day situation. And I can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way forward. It's not that I dislike what I did. It's not that I dislike the people I work with, although there were some. It's just, you'd spent your life working on something that went nowhere. And sure. I went, no, I want to go back to doing something where there's a touchable result out of it. And mm-hmm. a book is very much that way. You do a book. Sure, these days you can update it anytime you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do a book, it's a finished object. It's something you can actually put out there that people can interact with, that they can value for what it is, that allows other things to happen. It actually moves something forward in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in the end, was kind of the driving force for me to not be sitting in a corporate thing, being the hamster in the wheel, but actually doing something of my own that produced a creative, touchable result.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. So when you did officially then make the change from the corporate world into your company, Dreamstone Publishing, were there other books you were reading about running a business, or were there, you know, people you were talking to, or did that just kind of come organically when you officially made that switch and turned it into an actual business?
Because we'd had the business in existence since the early 90s and just kind of parked things, reinvented things every so often, there were certain connections and things that were already there.
Okay.
In the stage when we did the art prints and things, we'd actually been a very early adopter of being an online business. So in the late 90s, like 98, 99, we had a full website and we were selling online and shipping internationally, and which from Australia was painful.
Right.
So there were all these things that we'd already learned that I could reapply, that I okay. could say, what's the update on that stuff? How do I use that now? And because I'd already been publishing my own books and digging myself into how do all the modern tools work for some years before I actually went to directly, actively working at it as a business,
mm-hmm.
I'd already built quite a few connections in online communities, and I'm in something like 300 Facebook groups.
Oh, wow.
Most of them are publishing community related.
Okay.
And most of my business comes directly out of connections made on Facebook. So I don't advertise the business. I do advertise books themselves mm-hmm. sometimes. Usually as part of a launch process, not so much continuously.
Okay.
But the connectedness just spread. The connectedness of the world now is a fantastic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I read a scatter of books and more likely to read articles or go searching for specific things than just read a book for the sake of it. I'm looking for a particular area of something I'm doing with the business.
Mm-hmm.
I'll search something really specific.
Okay.
People, again, there's quite a few people I've talked to and worked with, and I'm a big believer in mentorship in one way but not in another. So there's a few people I've worked with and paid good money to work with, you know, where the result I've got out of doing that wasn't the result I expected to get.
Okay.
You never lose out of doing something like that because you always learn something. You just may not learn what you think you're going to learn. So in that sense, it can be a negative experience for people if they don't go into it.
Mm-hmm.
Expecting it may be that way. But working with other people who've done something successfully always has value. So in that sense, it's good. You always get something out of it.
Yeah.
And it's worth seeking out people to learn from, even if what you learn is that their way is not your way.
I'm sure that makes sense.
So that's a kind of a balancing act. So yeah. I feel like I'm talking to other people and learning things from them. And sometimes I learned that's not a thing I want to do. Sometimes mm-hmm. that's a thing I need to do, but I need to outsource. And I learned along the way a lot about how my own head works.
Sure. So what you currently do then at your company and working with business owners who want to become writers, why should business owners write a book?
So there's two layers of answer to that. One is about how the world has changed. Mm-hmm. So if you look back, if you go back 10 years or more, the only way to have a book out there was either traditional publishing, where you were one of hundreds of thousands of people submitting manuscripts and pitches to publishers, and they chose a tiny, tiny, less than 1% of those to publish, and they chose not on the criteria of how good was your work, but on the criteria of, is the work good, and can we sell 5,000 or more of those in the local area?
Mm-hmm.
Because everything was regional. So no matter how good your work was, if your topic was a bit narrow and they couldn't sell 5,000 in their region, you were never going to get a publishing contract. In that era, yeah, you could self-publish, but self-publishing then meant spending thousands and thousands of dollars to have somebody typeset it for you and then print 1,000 or more copies and have them stored in your shed and you market them into shops or anywhere else.
Hmm.
So that was a very money and time-consuming exercise as well. But what that created was the concept, which still exists now, that someone who has a book published is really important and significant because they had to be good enough to jump through all those hoops and get it out there.
Right.
So in terms of the authority creation, having a book gives you a massive amount of authority because everybody has that embedded thing about how hard it is to get a book published and to be an author.
Oh, sure.
So then you come back to the other side of the second thing, which is that most people, if you've got a business and you've got customers, then you already know that there are people who want to know what you know. Or you wouldn't have customers. They're already paying you for your knowledge, whether
right.
that's the application of your knowledge or teaching, it doesn't matter. They're already paying for your knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty comfortable thing to bring a product to market knowing there's already an audience for it.
Mm-hmm.
When you also look at it, most business owners have a massive amount of written material existing in their business. They'll have blog posts, they'll have stuff on their website, they'll have FAQs, they'll have standard brochures, they'll have handout sheets, they may have instructions on how to do something or assemble something. They'll have a collection of clippings from media articles or stuff they've put out elsewhere. They've probably got a bunch of standard email responses they give to people.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have a shop front or they talk to people on the phone, there'll be about 10 or 20 questions that they answer every damn day. And they feel like, oh, my God, push the button, run the tape for the answer to that one. Because people always ask them. So most business owners have 70 to 80% of the material they need to write a book already in existence. It's just in all those pieces.
Oh, wow. Okay. So going through all that material, and let's say that's for their customers, is that in a way kind of giving away their secret sauce of what how they run their business or what's in their head? And is that a good thing to do? Like, well, like if I write a book about, you know, because I'm really good at marketing, the exact steps I use to run a marketing campaign, is that going to, I guess, help my business or will that potentially hurt it because people already then know my process?
Okay, it will almost certainly help your business.
Okay.
So let's dig into that one for, because there's a couple of layers there. The only case in which I would say it would be bad to give away everything is for people who are doing things like leading edge, new maths, chemistry, science type space stuff where
okay.
it's a patentable thing. You know, you don't give away
right.
core uniqueness. But something like marketing,
mm-hmm.
how many thousand people do marketing? Everybody has a process.
Right.
Many of those processes work pretty well. What makes them work well is not just the steps, but how the person approaches those steps. There'll be little unique pieces that distinguish your approach from somebody else's approach. Mm-hmm. And you can write those steps out in a book. And if you say 100 people read the book, 70% of them will never act on it in any way at all.
Okay.
10% of them will read it, understand it, say, you know, that's fantastic, but fuck, that's a lot of work. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
And they will. They'll be like that. They'll be, And what they will do is the bit in the back that says, if you'd like me to do it for you, they'll take me on. They will ring you because they'll like, or email you because they're like, oh my God, just do it for me. You're like, I really understand now. Now I know why I'm paying you.
Sure.
So those people are great. That's great for your business. Then another 10% of them will go, I'll have a go. And they'll have a bit of a go and they'll either succeed and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Or it'll all come unstuck and they'll hate it and they'll throw the method away.
Sure.
Or it'll come unstuck and they'll ring you. So you'll get some of them back as well.
Okay. Oh, good.
And the remaining 10% will actually act properly. We'll do it. We'll get some benefit out of it and may come back to you for mentoring on how to do it better.
Hmm. Okay.
So really, out of 100 people who buy the book, about 25 of them will probably come back to you for something.
Wow, that's great. Okay, and then you can just, you know, work with them on another project. That's okay. Yeah. That makes sense then. So on your site, it talks about how you're able to help business owners then do a book in 3 days. Could you talk about that process a little bit? Because that seems, I mean, and maybe it's just because right now I'm trying to think about like the idea of writing a book and it seems monumental to me. So how do you distill, you know, this idea of something like a book into 3 days?
Okay. So you are not alone in having that. The two most common responses when people go to think about writing a book based around their business, so that the three-day thing is primarily for nonfiction, for things based around someone's business or a particular hobby or skill area.
Mm-hmm.
The two things people think of is, oh, my God, there's so much I don't know what to write, so they just freeze up. Or, oh, there's so much, I have to tell people everything, how will I ever write it all down? So either way, they lock themselves up.
Yeah.
The secret to things, apart from realizing that they already have that 70 or 80% of the material in some form already, that they've written down over time, so mm-hmm. that the writing's not actually as scary as they thought, the key thing is to realize that you don't have to tell everybody everything.
Hmm.
In fact, people don't want you to tell them everything you know, because it's a bit like saying to someone, here, read the encyclopedia.
Oh, yeah.
People are going to go, you're kidding. But if somebody wants to know about your topic, and we already know they do because they're already your customer,
mm-hmm.
they usually want to know specific things. That comes back to those questions you answer all the time. And most businesses, some only have one or two products. You really mm-hmm. narrow. But most have a number of products or services they do that are all related. And each of those can be a book. So in the old days, again, when you were dealing with traditional published things and you were getting things in paper and you were paying shipping, and people tended to go like, I want to get weight. I want to get value for my money.
Yeah.
So if they wanted to know how to do paving, they would buy a 400-page book on home improvement and pay $70 by the time it was shipped and whatever, and get 4 pages on paving.
Right? Yeah.
Now, if they want to know how to do paving, they'll buy a 20-page digital book on Amazon. They'll pay $2 to $5 for it, and they'll mm-hmm. get 20 pages on paving because it's just on paving. And the guy who wrote the home improvement book now has 20 different books up there, each of which are 20 pages long,
mm-hmm.
on a specific segment. And they contain more information about each of the segments than used to go in the one big book. He makes more money because people buy 20 books at $3 each or whatever. And the buyer is happier because they only get their one thing solved. People buy books because it solves a problem for them.
Mm-hmm.
How do I do X? Or in some cases, fiction is the problem it solves is I need a break from my real life. That sense. Nonfiction, it's how do I do? I want to learn about. So the reader gets their problem solved. They get more data than they otherwise would. And the writer makes more money because they have more books to sell. And as a business owner, they get greater authority because they haven't just written one book. They've written a series.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's the premise, the first premise we start with. So the beginning of the 3-day process, which is best done where I get people, and I it's only like between 10 and 20 people at a time, so okay. That you get attention you need. But we get in the room for 3 days, go through the process, and the process starts with that recognition that you don't have to worry everything. And then we drill down into those top 5 questions that your customers ask you. Because there's your first 5 books.
Right.
And because each of those questions will be about a specific issue. Sometimes 2 of them will be so closely related you might wrap them in together.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, to the first book, which is what we do in the 3 days, will be about the most commonly asked question in that business. Because that's also the one you're most likely to have the largest amount of existing FAQs and other written material about, because you answer it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So then the next stage, having identified it and done some thinking about the frame in which people ask for it, you know, what's the actual problem they're solving, not the words they use, but what's the problem they're solving.
Oh, sure.
Because people, using the paving thing again, people might say, how do I lay pavers? But really what they want to know is, how do I make my yard prettier? How do I have a deck or a paved area outside my house where there is mud in winter? Or the problem is about comfort and life and emotional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The practical stuff is a method to get there. So we dig into what's the emotional content that drives the problem. And then we go digging into what material do people already have.
Okay.
And when they answer the question, if they're talking to the person in person, what's the order in which they answer the question? Because that helps them with the dot points of the order in which stuff has to be in the book. Because you need to tell them this before you tell them that, or it won't make sense, that mm-hmm. type of order of things. And then we start plugging existing content into some of that and work out what's missing that actually still needs to be written, and then work out how that needs to be put together so that by the end of the 3 days, they have a very solid first draft of their book that's either ready to be edited and polished to publish, mm-hmm. or they might need to get some more images if it's like, how do I do? And
oh,
you
sure.
might want of doing so, they might need to get some images to put in, but it's all mapped out,
mm-hmm.
it's all done, it's just assembling the last bits.
Oh, that's great.
And it's like, sure, someone could go through that process just based on my description, then someone could go home and do it.
Yeah,
it's a bit like you said, are you giving away the secret sauce? Well, no, because the secret sauce, in a sense, is that people want their handheld, people
right.
want the chance to be really locked in on a focus. If you try and do it in 3 days at home, unless you live by yourself and you're very disciplined, stuff will happen. I want to go out. I want to. The kids will decide to have a screaming fit about sharing toys, and your focus will be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas going somewhere, getting in the room with people, a small group of people where the entire focus is on getting the book done for a few days, creates amazing acceleration.
Yeah.
Having someone there so that you can ask me, I'm stuck, how do I do this bit? That hand-holding allows people to get past the blockages really fast and just get it done.
Yeah.
So I'm quite happy to tell people about the process, because in the end, I've got a bunch of worksheets and things that help people do it faster. There's a whole lot of techniques to deal with specific ways people get stuck that I know.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things are what makes it end up being better if they work with me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't stop me sharing it.
Oh, sure.
And being thrilled if someone does it by themselves.
Right. So with what you work on, do you also work with your clients on the editing part and actually doing the publishing, whether it's, you know, self-publishing? Yes. Or online? You handle all of that in-house?
Yes.
Okay. Do you also do book design and I guess, like,
yep,
the whole...
Everything. We can provide individual pieces with people. If people just want proofreading or editing or a cover design, we can do that. But we also do full end-to-end packages with everything included.
Okay.
Because, again, I'm a big believer that as an author, particularly if you're a business owner, you shouldn't have to become a publishing expert just to get your material out there.
Right.
Your subject matter expertise is in your topic area, in the thing that your business is, in the thing you're writing about. You shouldn't have to learn a whole extra thing that you're not really interested in just to get your material out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you call business. If it's not your core business, outsource it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So with what you do, and especially with writers, there's the whole element of writer's block and just being fearful of putting their information out there because maybe they think that they're not that smart, something like that. How do you coach your clients to get past writer's block or get past that fear of putting this thing out there into the world?
For business owners particularly, I start with the fact that if they already have clients, they already know that people want their knowledge. If they didn't know enough, they wouldn't already have clients.
Sure.
It's very, very simple on that sense. And for most people, that, oddly enough, that's a bit of a revelation. It never occurs to them in that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Then it comes down to the fact that when we know something well, it's ordinary to us.
Right.
So when you first learn to drive a car, you're all over the place and it's terribly complicated and your brain is going a million miles an hour and you struggle to integrate it. Fast forward 10 years later, you talk, you have conversations, you have a drink, you just do it.
Right,
on the road, and you have those moments where, in fact, you don't remember the last 3 miles, but you got there anyway because you're used to doing it.
Right.
So it's become ordinary to you. And that thing happens where if you talk to people, whether that's on the bus, at a party, and so people say, what do you do? And you say, blah, 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 I do this. And they go, 70 or 80% of the time people go, wow, that's amazing, I could never do that.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who's never had that experience. That just happens. And why is that? Because it is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to do it. So what you do is amazing. And for creatives, that's particularly true. If people who are artists in any form, that you will meet people all the time who think they couldn't do something creative and are just mind blown by the things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to remember when it comes to writing a book is that you're writing the book for all those people who think what you do is amazing. For those people, you know so much more than them. It is amazing.
Yeah.
And in real terms, most people know more than 95% of people about the thing they specialize in.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at it that way, that means 95% of the rest of the world might buy your book.
Right, which is, that's actually a great thing to think about, too. I never really thought about that. That's great. Wow. So with everything you've done, what would you say is the best advice you've ever received?
It's probably pretty simple. The statement of, scared or not, just do it.
Mm-hmm. I like that. The straight to the point, and it makes perfect sense. Yeah. So again,
I mean, the worst you can do is fail, and if you fail, you learn something from it, and you just do it again.
Yeah, that's great. Kim, I want to thank you for taking the time to chat with me today. I really appreciate it. If the listeners would like to see more and hear more about what you're working on, what is the best way they can do that?
If they go to dreamstonepublishing.com, there's plenty of information there. And if you're looking for my books or the books that the business publishes, if you search Dreamstone Publishing on Amazon, you'll get 3 or 4 pages worth of search results.
That's wonderful. Great. I will make sure I put those links in the show notes. Excellent. But again, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Advance Your Art Podcast. If you like this episode, please go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button so that every single time I release a new episode, it will go directly to you without even thinking about it. If you're interested in hearing older episodes, please go to advanceyourart.com where you can find the catalog of everything I've done so far, as well as contact information and projects I'm working on. Thank you again, and have a great day.